Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solak. It is a beautiful Friday morning, which means it is a fan Friday edition of the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. Ben, how you feel for this one?
Trevor?
We gave it a theme. We gave this podcast a theme, so we know that the questions aren't totally off the wall. It's combine related, because we figured, you know, tis the season. But I don't think that means that the people went any easier on us when it comes to putting us in tough situations, right?
No, I mean, well, firstly, it was a good week for NFL content in general. And then secondly...
Every week's a good week for content, brother.
That's true. But secondly, I think that combine time is maybe a few years ago, this would have been serious. And I mean, it still was. That being said, I think Draft Twitter is now self-aware enough where, like, they are good at making jokes about themselves. And we got a couple questions that I think leaned into that pretty nicely. So, no, there's always a good question.
One of them has to do with your weight. So, did you see that one before we got on here?
One of them had to do with what?
Your weight. Like, your overall mass.
Yes, I saw that one. And it's because last night being a Wednesday night, in the immediate wake of the Greg Robinson news, I shared that I am 157 pounds, which is equivalent to the amount of weed that Greg Robinson tried to drive across the Texas-Mexico border with.
I'm quoting the Anchorman line. I'm not even mad. That's impressive. For you to even think that you were going to pull that off. I mean, the Border Patrol people were probably pretty mad. They probably didn't have the same level of respect.
Yes, probably.
But they're nerds. Just kidding. I'm just kidding. God, everybody calm down. It's Friday. Lighten up. Ben, before we get underway with the questions, I do want you to know that as it will be when this podcast comes out, it will be snowing where I now currently live.
This is like the second snowfall you've had in Charlotte.
Yeah. But like this one is supposed to be the mother of all snowstorms.
Okay. Does the mother mean like an inch?
Yes.
Okay. You guys are so lame. How much snow Charlotte tomorrow? Literally like don't even talk to me.
It's going
to
be
Charlotte
like
an area. Could winter weather advisory issued for several Charlotte neighborhoods could be.
Dude, it's serious.
Accumulations of 1 to 2 inches.
Brother!
You are such nerds.
Brother!
Wow. Freaking noobs.
I got a winter weather advisory on my phone.
Noob!
I didn't know what was going on.
1 to 2 inches of snow is like, I might put on a long sleeve tee.
Yeah, you're going to be excited for Indianapolis when we're there next week because it's going to be like 15 degrees and it's going to be, Ben's going to be in his natural element. You know what? I'm gonna throw a snowball at Ben. I'm gonna make a snowball somehow, and yeah, I'm gonna throw a snowball at Ben at some point.
Make a snowball somehow. That's the most down south statement ever because you do not realize the way snow accumulates and then remains for like weeks on end.
Listen, I'm gonna break out my goggles and my gloves, and I'm gonna get down to work, and I'm gonna science the crap out of that snow that's on the ground, and we're gonna form it into a circle of a shape. And then I'm going to throw it right at you.
I accept.
Groundbreaking
stuff.
Do
we want to talk about these changes to the combine, the new drills?
Sure. Let's mention those really quick. Do you have them up?
Yes, I do. So one of the changes, now we're moving into prime time. There's a different interview structure. But today we learned a lot more about the new drills that they'll be installing at the combine. And so this per Jordan Reed at J Reed NFL.
Big shout out
to the Washington Redskins. New combine drill additions: smoke routes for QB slot receivers, O-line, D-line, tight end sled push for 2 to 5 yards, D-line timed figure eight bend drill, DB wide receiver timed W and gauntlet, O-line screen drill for screen plays, and they're subtracting the O-line rabbit drill.
Thank God.
I talked about that drill.
Am I talking about the? Am I thinking the wrong one? Which one's the rabbit drill?
The rabbit is one dude lines up in a pass set, and the other dude is just responsible for running horizontally back and forth.
Oh.
And then the objective of the pass setter is to mirror the motions of the rabbit. So you just chase the rabbit across.
I thought we were talking about – I thought it was the drill where they just basically have a guy sprint and he drops back like 15 yards and like shuffles 15 yards back.
No. So, yeah, I don't know what that one is, but that's still there. And then the D-line shuffle bag touch is also gone. So, interesting things. Number one, smoke routes are – I'm happy that they're there because they're a harder throw than people realize. But it's also interesting that it felt necessary to add those. I guess maybe as the spread offense continues to go into the NFL, they want to see them. But, like, it's not like a difficult route to run or anything. The timed W drill makes no sense to me at all because the W drill is not something you try to do quickly, I should say. It's not a drill. It's like, how quickly can you accomplish this? It's a drill of like, what is your technique? So it's very odd to me that they're timing it. Timing the gauntlet, I guess, also in terms of like, you know, making sure the person's not just weaving and taking it slowly, like the faster you do it, the better. But still, like, I don't know. To me, that's a skill thing. It's not a time thing. I don't care how fast you do, as long as you do it well. And then I guess after you do it well, if you did it well and fast, that's nice. But either way, very odd, in my opinion, to be doing that. Figure eight drill's fun. I wish the rabbit drill stayed. I think the rabbit drill's very helpful. So it's a whole new structure this year. Very interesting to see what happens.
What I'm looking forward to the most is obviously that figure eight drill, because that's a big deal for a position in which the combine means a lot, and that's the edge rushing position. If you can bend, you can play. So you get to figure out really a one-on-one, like, oh, wow, can this guy bend around the edge? Like, how close can he turn quarters? And I think that when guys make that figure eight drill look really easy, you can see where players can really succeed in the NFL. So that's the one that I'm most thankful for that's in there. That's just what I think. Question time. You ready to get underway?
Set it.
All right. First question. Actually, I should preface it by saying this week what we did is we asked people to give us over-unders, whether it's, you know, what's Henry Ruggs going to run in the 40 or what Mekhi Becton's weight's going to be, how many wide receivers jump over 40 inches, or like things like that. Give Ben and I some over-unders. If we disagree on big ones, we'll remember those during Combine Week. But we had you guys list off a bunch of those questions, and we got a ton of them, actually. So the first one from Ryan. The LSU 40 times for Grant Delpit, Christian Fulton, Patrick Queen, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Jacob Phillips, Justin Jefferson, and Thad Moss. So he says Grant Delpit 4.52 over-under. Ben?
That's a good line for him. If he runs in the 4.4s, it's great news. Like 4.5 low makes a lot of sense. I'll give him all. I'll put him under 4.52.
I think he's going under. I do. And he's going under 4.52.
I think it'll be close.
Christian Fulton. I'm actually not really worried about that one. I'm really not. Christian Fulton, 4.47. Over under.
Probably over. I don't think Fulton's got huge wheels.
I don't either.
Thirsty. I don't think he has great speed.
I think that this number is a good one. Like, I think 4.47 is good. Like, if he runs under, I think it's going to be 4.45, 4.46. And if he runs over, I think it's going to be like 4.49 ish. I'll say under. I'll say under with Christian Fulton. Just to be a little different, well, I'll say he gets a hair under 4.47. Patrick Queen, 4.5 flat.
I wish over, but him running a 4.5 flat would be sick.
I think 4.5 flat is fast. Now I think he runs low 4.5s, but I don't think he's running in the 4.4s. So I'm going
he's
over there.
He's not running the 4.4s.
I'm going over there as well. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 4.54.
Over?
I'm also saying over. He's 5'9", 210. I just don't think Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and I don't necessarily think he's slow, but I don't think he has the stride length to really be a blazer in like the 40-yard dash. I really don't. So I'm going over with 4.54. Jacob Phillips, 4.67.
Isn't Jacob Phillips like 240 something pounds?
I don't know what his exact weight is. He's bigger than Patrick Queen.
He's definitely bigger than Patrick Queen. Everything Patrick Queen. Oh, he's less than 6'4", 233. 4.67. I mean, like, sure, under. I don't think. I'm not too worried about his speed. So I'll take under 4.6.
I'll go just a hair under. I'll do under. I think it's like 4.65, which is, you know,
yes,
under. So Justin Jefferson, 4.48.
Over.
Yeah. This
the,
one
the official line on him is 4.51, and I have
this one was that. Easy for me. I don't think Jefferson's gonna run sub 4.5.
No, he's not.
But that's okay.
I don't think so either.
Like, that's
if
okay.
If Jefferson runs anything below like a 4.47, I might have to go back to his film because I don't think he was fast.
I thought he was like good, but I don't think people realize like how fast 4.4-ish is. Like we just casually throw around all this like, oh yeah, he's gonna run in the 4.4s. Like, y'all, 4.4 is fast. I think Justin Jefferson's plenty of athletic to play in the NFL, but 4.4 is fast. So I'm gonna go. I think he's again a guy who runs low 4.5s. Right. Thad Moss.
I think people got to re-remember what it means to run 4.4. Like, that's a big deal. Like, in the 4.4s, I mean.
Yes. Yeah. Thad Moss. 4.71.
Nope. No.
Nope.
Over?
Yeah, that was... Actually, Thad that Moss? One was my easiest over.
Thad Moss is a healthy young man.
He's not fast.
Got some girth to him.
He does.
He's a bit of a plotter.
He does. Yeah. This isn't the next question, but it's a 40 question, so I'm just going to stick with it. Chase Young, over under, 4.7 flat.
What was the number?
4.7 flat.
Probably a good number. I would guess my initial thought was over, and I'd probably go with that. If he like runs like a 4.75 rotation and nobody cares, and he's going to be the second overall pick. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that it's
right.
It's concerning anything like that. Like, obviously you don't want him in the 40s or the 49s, but at 265, 4.75, good. So I'm going to take over.
I'm going to say under. I'm going to say he gets a shade under. I'll go high 4.6s. That's what I think for Chase Young, which I think. Like, I was reading reports on him, and they were saying, you know, they say, like, oh, he was clocked in near 4.65 or something like that. You always got to add some time to that because it's people getting jumpy with stopwatches or just taking his best overall time. So I think that 4.7 flat's actually a pretty good number for him when it comes to over-under. Yeah. But I'll go under. I'll have some fun and go under.
You have so much faith in these athletes, Trevor.
I do? We've disagreed on, like, one guy. All right, here's a non-40 question. Josh asked, I was really high on Ed Oliver last draft season. Who did you have graded higher, Oliver last season or Kinlaw this season, and who do you think will be the better pro?
I had Oliver graded higher.
I did as well.
I had Oliver, I believe, as like a top five player.
I had him at three. I had him three
yeah,
overall.
Yeah, and I have Kinlaw comfortably outside of my top 10. Who do I believe will be the better pro? In that, nothing that Ed Oliver did in Buffalo in year one makes me believe that he's going to bust. Relative to Kinlaw, who has not yet stepped into the league and is obviously incredibly high ceiling.
Yeah.
But has still to himself a floor. I would say I still believe Oliver is likely to be the better player. Kinlaw's ceiling is higher. Markedly, right? Oliver's got a great ceiling, but like Oliver's ceiling is conditional on that he becomes Aaron Donald, which only one person in the league has ever done in the history of the league, and that person was Aaron Donald. Whereas Kinlaw, body type wise, has a lot more historically dominant defensive tackles to point to and say, I'm the correct size, length, and strength to become what you're looking for at your three tech position. So Oliver has a slimmer chance to be truly great. But if you're just taking like the average of their possible outcomes, I think that Oliver is likely the better player.
I would agree in kind of all of those areas. I understand it's a little bit different because how they win and how Oliver won with leverage and quickness and strength really overwhelmed a lot of college football players, especially at the level that he was playing when he was playing against Houston. But it's not 1-1, but Kinlaw never at any point had the production that Aaron Donald had when he was, or sorry, that Ed Oliver had when he was in school, including when Oliver was 18 years old and he got 22.5 tackles for loss. So I agree with you. There's obviously a lot of things to like with Javon Kinlaw. He has a very high ceiling as well. But if you're asking me this question now, I had Ed Oliver graded higher. I would have Ed Oliver graded higher in this class than I would Javon Kinlaw. And so I got to stick with that. That's who I would think would be the better pro in this case. Both very good players. Does the lightest prospect, here's the first Greg Robinson question. Does the lightest prospect weigh in over or under Greg Robinson's weed haul? Greg Robinson's weed haul, we're gonna round up. We're going to go with 157 pounds. What do we think?
Not 156.9?
Well, yeah, I'm going to round up. I'm just going to go to an even 157 because you said that you weighed 157, so that's going to make it more easily translatable for the rest of this show.
Yeah, so Robinson tried to cross the Mexico border with a sole lack of weed. That's street terminology, Craig. Please keep up. Listen, the smallest football player I've just, like, ever seen, ever.
A sole lack of weed.
The smallest football player I've ever seen.
Oh, man.
In my entire life.
Yes.
Is Jake Elliott, who is a kicker for the Eagles out of Memphis, and he weighed 166 pounds, right?
Yeah.
We've had two players in the mock draftable database, so this is since 1999, two players come in at less than 157 pounds, J.J. Nelson and Aaron Lockett, two wide receivers. So if so, it's by the hair on their chinny chin chin, and it really should not be the case. So I do not think we get that. No.
Man, now, J.J. Nelson was smaller than 157?
J.J. Nelson's combine was amazing. He was 5'10",
yes,
156,
yikes,
with an 8.25-inch hand size, which are 0 and 1 percentile, respectively, for the position. And then he ran a 4.28 40 with a 1.5 flat 10 yard. He broad jumped 10.7 to a short shuttle 4.15, just like insane agility and explosiveness.
I mean, he better. Ball. He weighs a buck 50.
He's like 70 pounds less than the average.
You better be fast enough to where literally no one can touch you, because if they do, you're going to break in half.
J.J. Nelson is literally 70 pounds lighter than DK Metcalf and ran the 40 in 5/100ths of the second faster.
Imagine shout not DK drafting Metcalf. DK Metcalf.
I'm going to do a whole article next week of just remembering the DK Metcalf combine. I don't care. Just again talking about how much fun it was.
After DK Metcalf ran the combine, I jokingly said that Metcalf's floor was number 4 overall because of John Gruden and the Raiders. Obviously, that didn't happen.
Listen, the Raiders are thrilled to have Cleveland Farrell. I don't know what you're talking about. Cleveland Farrell was a great pick for them, and they never would have wanted anything besides him, and he was the best.
DK Metcalf would be a better edge rusher than Cleveland Farrell, too.
Wow. This is a Fan Friday now, officially.
Do you see, Nick asked this, do you see Josh Uche succeeding as an off-ball linebacker in the NFL? Do you like him as a fit for the Packers?
Yes to the first half, right? I think Josh Uche can be successful as an off-ball linebacker. I think if you're drafting him to play off-ball Sam on all three downs, then you have to expect him to become a quality prospect for you, not in year one, but really year two and year three. Because his off-ball film at Michigan had some really quality flashes to it, but was generally inconsistent, and that's understandable. reasonable and totally fair because it's not his primary position.
He just wanted to get to the passer.
Right, from a utility perspective. So, okay. So we start there. For Green Bay specifically, I really like it in the sense that we want to be able to do with Clay Matthews and Kyler Fackrell that which we've seemingly lost, which is have a guy who can be an off-ball Sam and then an on-ball Sam with complete versatility, right? Mm. On any down, can line up in either position, which again, I don't think you can ask Uche to do in year one. I don't think you can ask anybody to do that in year one. That's very difficult to do. And it takes time to acclimate to that sort of a role. But I do believe that Uche's best deployment in the league allows him to spend some time stand up, see gap, rusher off the edge, speed to power, reduce surface area, whatever, while also affording him the opportunity to rush from the A-gap stand up and blitz from depth stand up. And accordingly, with those alignments comes occasionally dropping into coverage. So that's the paradigm from which I would operate. And I think Mike Pettin is a good spot for Uche thereof. So cautious yes to the first half. I wouldn't want him to be a permanent off-ball guy. And if you want him to do that, fine, but it's going to take a couple years. To Green Bay, I think they have a good formula and a good memory of similar players in place such that they would be able to accomplish, I think, a more balanced role for him between off-ball and on-ball stuff, which I think is a really good deployment for him, and he's a really good body type for it. So I like him in Green Bay. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think for Green Bay, I mean, that all starts with Green Bay just needs good football players at the linebacker position in kind of like every way. So in that sense, he is a fit for the Packers because I think that he upgrades what they need a little bit. I would be cautious, kind of like you were saying there, to put a lot on his plate right away in terms of both roles, because I think that his highest impact is clearly rushing the pocket. I think that he's got a great talent for that. But in terms of what Green Bay needs, man, I feel like Green Bay needs more of just like that traditional interior kind of player. So depending on when you're getting Josh Uche in the draft, you know, if he's dropping all the way to the third round, which I don't think is going to happen, he's obviously a fine pick there, but they need help at linebacker, I think, around those kinds of spots. Not that Uche would be a bad player, so that's why it's kind of like an interesting question. I don't think he would be bad for the Packers at all. I think they'd need a different angle, especially with a higher pick where you might be picking Uche, but it's not a great traditional linebacker class, like a true off-ball linebacker class. So if they picked him on day two, I guess it would make sense to me as well. So I like Josh Uche, though, and at the end of the day, Packers need good linebackers, so in that sense, he could definitely be a fit for Green Bay. If each of you had to do one combine drill and had to get into the top 75th percentile for it to save TDN from being disbanded, which would it be?
Wait, run that back?
So me and you have to do one combine drill, and one of us has to get at least in the 75th percentile in one of these drills.
Oh, no.
Or TDN gets completely disbanded. Which one would it be?
Hmm. So for me, our options are very limited. Probably the short shuttle. Right? Anything, I don't have to open my stride. I think short shuttle is a lot of technique to it. But also there's a selection bias because people who suck at the short shuttle don't do it. So the numbers are skewed up. Okay. What would I have to do in order to be like, 75th percentile for what position? Can I claim to be an offensive tackle and then run the short shuttle?
Yes. Yes. You can. You can.
Ben Solak, offensive tackle, U Chicago, running the short shuttle, report for duty. And now we're good. Because the average short shuttle for an offensive tackle is 4.75. And I can run a 5-second short shuttle. Or no, wait, I have to be below that. Oh, frick! Man. Wonder if defensive tackles are worse. Okay.
I would go the 60-yard shuttle for interior offensive linemen. Okay. That's what I would do.
Interior offensive linemen. Good idea. Those guys are, yeah, okay.
Because 60-yard shuttles, you're getting a lot of stamina in there.
Yeah. All right, four offensive tackles.
Yes.
The average three cone is 7.8. Okay, it's the same for offensive line, for interior offensive line. For interior offensive line, it's a 4-7 short shuttle, another 4-7 short shuttle. Okay, so yeah, I'm trying either the three cone or the short shuttle as an offensive tackle. And I don't, my three cone when we did it last year was like 8 flat, and the average is 7-8. So I've got to cut like at least 2/3 of a second. But my short shuttle, I only have to cut about like half of a second. So I think I'll run the short shuttle. And I think I'll save TDN. And I think I'll be memorialized forever.
Can't wait for you to fail us all. Really, truly looking forward to it.
Can't even be above average as a tackle.
Number of round one, we'll get back to some over-unders here. Number of round one wide receivers who will fall to round two because of bad three cones. Shout out DK Metcalf.
I wrote this on January 7th, which is after, I believe, the Metcalf, the Eagles in the playoffs, if memory serves. This was the underlying reason the Metcalf fell. General managers want complete players beyond role players with their first round picks. These selections will survive changes in the coaching staff and help respond to injuries at the position. They are more likely to become truly elite talents at their respective positions. I followed it up by saying, it's tough to argue that paradigm of player valuation in a vacuum, but in the specific context of Metcalf, it's painfully short-sighted. For a wide receiver's job in the NFL, Metcalf is the best and the most valuable aspect of the game, right? Which is to say, everyone knew that Metcalf wasn't going to go in the league and be the best route runner, be the best intermediate separator, be the best rat guy, whatever. And so teams said, this guy's a role player. He's just going to be a deep threat for us. We're not going to spend a high-value pick on him, which was unnecessary given that Metcalf is so unique as a field stretcher. I would argue that in conjunction with is a are were bigger they were both bigger parts of the reason that he fell besides a bad three-cone time.
Yeah, it's probably a package of all of it. It was like the three cone gave you some doubts, and then you allowed yourself to write it off with the neck. And at that point, you had multiple layers of evidence to think, okay, that's why we're not going to draft this guy in the first round. Which, it's fine to be wrong, but you're wrong. That's all.
Listen, you know I agree with me on that. Regardless, of the top guys, I don't think any of them are going to have a prohibitively bad three cone.
T.
Like,
Higgins.
is Higgins round one? Yeah, I guess
Yes.
Higgins is the most likely to fall into that bucket for sure.
Yeah.
But I'm not strong enough on Higgins in the league to say he was going to be a round one guy regardless. And then what if people look at how good Metcalf was in his rookie year and go, all right, let's not make the same mistake. And then they do take T. Higgins in the first round. Oh man, that would really be owning yourself twice. But it's possible.
The long kind or the wrong kind of reaction to what you're looking
Yeah,
for.
right.
I don't know, like Colin Johnson's another guy that comes to mind, but he's not going in round one. So T.
Yeah,
Higgins
I
is
think
clearly
Higgins is the
the
best one.
T. Higgins is clearly the biggest like Metcalf situation kind of comp here. So
I agree. In terms of the bad three cone, for sure.
who will be the fastest thick boy at the combine? I think we're talking like 300 pounds and up.
Oh, wow. Okay. I
What
was thinking like,
did you not plan on that?
well, no, I mean, like in my head, I was just like thinking, like, I mean, when I think of fast, thick boy, I think of Antonio Gibson out of Memphis. Because Antonio Gibson out of Memphis is dummy thick. And he's going
What's he gonna
to.
run?
He's going to run in the fourth.
He's gonna run in the what? The four what?
He's going to run in the four fours. And he's going to do it at like 6'2", 218. And it's going to be
Yeah,
delightful.
but then AJ Dillon's gonna run in the 4.4. Is it like 6'2" 50?
Dude, Trevor,
Yes.
my dear, dear friend,
Yes.
Dylan is not running in the four fours.
He could though. But what
It
if he
won't
did?
happen.
But what if he
But
did?
here's the thing, and I agree, but what if he did? But also, he will not.
Okay, that's fair. You make a
Over
good
under
point.
AJ Dylan 450, $100 right now.
I mean, over.
Oh, taking the over on 450. Interesting, because four fours is under 450,
Yeah,
Trevor.
but if there's nothing on the line, then I'm just going to make you feel uncomfortable and I'm going to say that he's going to run a 4.4. And then when he does, and I actually didn't have faith in it, then I'm going to bring it up and rub it in your face when in
Right.
reality I wasn't even going to lose
Pro
anything if he
plays,
didn't.
pro plays, pro plays. I respect it.
Yeah.
Okay.
fastest thick boy. I think Marlon Davidson's going to be fast.
You said over 300. Davidson's going to come in like 291.
Oh, is he? I thought he was like 298.
I'm saying I think he's going to come in low, but also I doubt he comes in over 300.
Mm. Yeah, but he's okay, but like I guess he's a thick boy.
I think.
But he's going to be fast.
If I look defensive line, Gallimore and Kinlaw, I think, are your two best bets. I think Kinlaw is going to run like mad.
Gallimore is the best bet.
Offensive tackles with like basketball background and tight end background are interesting to me. So like Ben Bartsch, the kid out of St. John's.
Tega Winogo's not working out.
So. He's not?
No.
I cry?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's not working out. He would have been a good one.
He would have been it.
Yeah. He would have been the fastest thick boy. I could have sworn I read that this morning. No? Just search it on Twitter.
I cry. Yes, won't do the NFL combine drills. I am big sad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, gotta give a shout out to my boy Khalil Davis from Nebraska, because him and his brother Carlos ran track when they were in high school. So
right. They
got the track background on him, so he might be able to move for a thick guy.
What if, and just hear me out on this.
Okay.
What if Mekhi Becton is fast?
Dude, I have this weird reality that I live in where I somehow think that Mekhi Becton is also going to be a crazy moving athlete at, well, we're going to get to his weight in a next question. Actually, I'm gonna find it so we can just ask it now. Where was it? Mekhi Becton. Somebody said Mekhi.
There's no way
over under Mekhi 365.
Three what?
365.
Oh man, I think he comes in under that.
I think he comes in way under that.
Yeah.
Way under that.
So there's no way a guy who weighs he's in the 350s, which I think Becton will come in like 350 something. There's no way that dude runs the fastest 40 of all the 300-plus guys.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think Becton is – like, saying fast for 355 sounds so dumb because, like, what is 355? Like,
right,
we don't have a framework for how fast that should be. But I think he moves well. And so I would say he'll be fast for his size. My guess is Neville Gallimore. That would be my guess for the fastest 40 for the players over 300.
So,
Neville Gallimore and Ben Bartsch are the two that I think are there.
So we had a question about Gallimore. I think the over-under was 4.8 flat for his 40.
Oh, okay, hang on. I want to make sure I double-check. I know when he was
his best time, I think I looked this up, was 4.76. So I'm going over 4.8, but I do think that he runs low 4.8s.
Yes, 4.76 in the 40. Neville Gallimore allegedly, and this is from the Feldman Freak List, Athletic.
I'm going higher than 4.8. But someone also asked the question: who has the better 40 time, him or Quinnen Williams? And Quinnen ran a 4.83. That's a better question.
Mm. Right. It's tricky because the 4.76, I agree he's going to be slower than that.
He's going to be a couple ticks higher than that.
4.83, like his athletic ability has had more buzz coming into this year than Quinnen's ever did. But also Quinnen was like generally an unknown coming into last year, whereas Gallimore was well known in terms of his athletic ability.
Mm-hmm.
I think he runs slower than Quinnen's 4.83, but I agree. I think he runs in the 4.8s. I think Gallimore is fast. So over on 4.8 flat and over on 4.83. But, you know, if he runs 4.81, I would
4.83 is like right where I'd tell you that Gallimore's running.
Well, it's always tough. It's like, all right, I can pull enough clips of a running back or a wide receiver or a corner or a safety and be like, this is 40. Whereas with like a defensive tackle like Gallimore, like maybe there's like one pursuit play where I'm like, look at him run, he's fast. But, like, it's very difficult to project these guys because you don't get nearly as many reps of them running on a straight line. And this is why, you know, how much does the 40 actually matter? I just know Gallimore to be a consummate athlete. And obviously, we have a rapport of a 4.76. So I'll say he runs a 4.86.
I'm going to say over on Quinnen, but just barely, man. I think they're going to be very comparable in 40 times. Right. I've seen Jonathan Taylor's 40 over-under set at 4.51. Is this the most sure bet at this year's combine? Ben, I'm going to defer this one to you because you wrote a whole article about it.
Yes. So of the lines that are currently available, which it's important when you're betting on something like the NFL Combine to be very aware of what books have lines and how they move, because all of these prop bets are going to be super limited. So when books open them, if they get really heavy action on one side, they will eventually close.
Hold on, I lost you. What did you say? When books get heavy action, they will what?
Right. So when books get heavy action on something like a combine prop bet, they'll push the line heavily in that direction. So for example, Henry Ruggs, as a lot of people now know, opened at a 4.38 time for his 40-yard dash. That time got bet so aggressively on the under, understandably, that eventually it was, if you bet under 4.38, it was at minus 400. It was at minus 500, right? So you needed to wager $500 to even make 100 on it. So it was 5-1 odds that he ran under 4.38. Now it's gone. Bet Online is taking it off the board because nobody bet the over, right? And so it's a massive liability for them to just leave it open and let people continue to pour money into it. Right. So as of right now, the single surest bet we have is Jonathan Taylor running sub 4.51, to the point at which it is now minus 500. It is at the limit at which they took Ruggs off the board. So many people have bet on sub 4.51. So if you just want to wager $50 to make $10 and literally never think of it again, go for it. Mm-hmm. Bet Online, faster than 4.51, Jonathan Taylor minus 500. In terms of profitable bets, that's not it because the lines are so skewed. But yes, Taylor's running in the 4.4s. I would imagine he runs a 4.42. You know what I mean? So yeah. I think we're good.
Nate Stanley, over under 28-inch vert.
I have no idea what a quarterback's vert is. Don't do this to me, guys. freaking, like, I don't know. I don't even know.
Dude, he's got it. It better be over if he's going to transfer over to tight end.
Okay, how many quarterbacks have jumped sub 28? I don't have this information at my disposal.
There's literally no way of telling.
I mean, he's like 240 some pounds, and he's pretty top heavy from what you can tell under his gigantic Iowa pads. I don't know. I'll give him the over.
Yeah, let's have some fun.
Go get your money, Nathaniel.
Nate Stanley over 28-inch vert. Let's go.
You can do it, buddy.
Vertical jump, wide receivers. Over under 2.5 to jump over 43 inches. Comparison 2019 wide receivers, Miles Boykin and Emmanuel Hall were the only ones to jump over 43 inches.
Yes, I think that.
He said 2.5 is the over.
I think it's under. I think we're unlikely to get 3.
Yeah.
And now it's important to note, when we came into the combine last year, we were like, yo, Emmanuel Hall is going to jump and it's going to be crazy. And then we also, you know, were for ourselves like, oh, dude, you know, we're going to get great jumps out of, like, I know people thought DK was going to have a good jump. And he was 40.5. Like Paris Campbell was 40. We expected that from him. But you get like Dylan Cantrell, he had 41 at his pro day. So he wasn't at the combine. But like Boykin came out of nowhere. I don't think anybody had Slayton jumping over 40. I don't think anybody had, you know, Stanley Morgan hitting 38.5, right? So, like, it is a little bit tough to tell who's going to jump really well. I will say, if I look now at the 2020 wide receivers, Ruggs is going to jump near 43, I can promise you. There's a chance Lamb gets into the 40s. Wouldn't be surprised if Visca or IU gets close to the 40s. And then, like, it's going to be some random day three guy who, like, shocks me. You know what I mean? Like,
I can't. Freaking... 43 is crazy.
I think we get one player at 43, and it's Henry Ruggs. I think Ruggs jumps, like, 42.5. People will forget this, but, like, Ruggs can fly.
I don't think anybody forgets that at this point.
Well,
I really don't.
Like, Ruggs can fly in the air, like, not just speed. Like, Ruggs has insane hops.
Man,
his,
I can't
like,
wait.
High school basketball highlights, ridiculous.
Can't wait for Jalen Waddle next year. We haven't even gotten to this year, and I'm already wishing that I could see
Ruggs is going to have the best 10, the best 40, the best vert, one of the three best broads. Brother.
I mean, you don't get that kind of speed by not having lower body strength. You know,
might be a good football player.
Might be Jacob Eason, Jordan Love, over under 55 mile an hour ball velocity.
Oh, freaking ball velocity? Okay, never mind. I hate all these questions. I lauded them in the beginning, but now I hate them.
So last year, the...
Eason's going to get over 50.
Okay, I'm going to list off all of the quarterbacks last year that threw 55 or higher, okay? Ryan Finley, Gardner Minshew, Jordan Te'amu, Nick Fitzgerald, Clayton Thorson, Brett Rippon, Will Greer. They all threw over 55.
Okay. A lot of those guys on film seemed like they had weaker arms than I think Jordan Love does.
Right.
So I would say they both go over 55. But at the same time,
I think both of them are over 55.
I don't, like, ball velocity surprises me every year. So, like, Eason could throw a 52, and I'd be like, yep, I don't get it. I never do. So I think they both go over, though.
Who do you think threw the hardest in the last 10 years? I have all the info up right here.
This is, I remember it's some stupid name, isn't it? It's like Hackenberg or Lynch or somebody.
Yeah, it is some stupid name. It's Josh Allen from Wyoming.
Oh, of course it's Josh Allen. I'm an idiot.
Josh Allen threw 62 miles per hour.
Steaming. It's like Mike Mayock told us at the combine. Dropping Josh Allen's pass because they're just too fast.
He was firing them off, man. Isaiah Simmons vert over under 40 and a half.
Ooh. Oh, Mother Mary. Oh, over?
I'm going to say under. If he jumps over 40 and a half, that is just insane. That's insane.
If we're calling him an off-ball linebacker.
Yeah.
The highest jump was 41 and a half. Oh, no, wait. Sorry, I have my years.
What an idiot.
Okay. So a lot of these guys are edges. Like Cam Wake jumped 45 and a half, right? Ryan Shazier jumped 42 inches? Mother Mary.
Dude, Ryan Shazier's combine was pretty crazy.
If we're just talking inside linebackers, as categorized by Mock Draftable,
yeah.
The highest ever jump was 40 and a half by Vandarjric McKinney. Van Der Esch was fourth highest at 39 and a half. Pat Willis at 39 was... Dude, I think Simmons is jumping near 40.
I mean, I think he's jumping near 40. I think that I'd give him anywhere from 38 to 40, which would be an incredible number to put up. But 41, again, like, jumping over 41 is insane. Jumping over 41 inches is insane.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure when we did the vert test last year, when we were doing our combine drills, the highest I got was like 26 or 27.
Well, like, I don't really think you're that analogous to
No. But what I'm saying is, like, I'm pretty, like, normal with athleticism. And for a guy to jump then 16 more inches than that to get into, like, 43, 42 is insane, you know?
I don't think that this comparison between you and Isaiah Simmons serves the metaphor.
Dude, I think it does in terms of I'm saying that, like, you truly just got to be a freak of nature to get anywhere near 40. And, like, Simmons might be, but, like, above 41 is so crazy to me.
I think Simmons jumps 40 and then
wait, what did you say? You think he did what?
I think he verts 41, 42.
Okay, man.
And then broad jump, which is where I think his his length, especially in his lower half, his really long legs, will help him the most in the broad. I mean, the record for off-ball linebackers is Jamie Collins at 11-7.
And 11-7 would be nuts.
Yeah, and then, like, there's only four off-ball linebackers who've ever hit over 11 flat. I think Simmons is jumping over 11, and I put my name on that. I think he jumps over 11.
Seth asked Jalen Reagor broad jump over under 11-10.5. Byron Jones has the broad jump record at 12-3.
Yeah. I want to find the Reagor jumping stats from his high school.
He jumped 26 feet in the long jump in the regional portion of the Texas state title run. 26 feet.
That's just like, can you imagine, like, being second in that group and just being like, I'm basically first. Like, I'm first among the human beings.
He won the state title with, like, a 24-inch jump. Because, like, that was, he did 26 at the regional meet, and then he didn't even, like, he won the state title with a jump that was nearly 2 feet less than what he had in the regional, which I thought was really funny. But.
All right, are you ready for this?
Sure.
So, from USA Today, TCU receiver signee Jalen Reagor wins Texas State title in long jump. Reagor has only, quote, dabbled in the long jump in the last few years, according to the Dallas Morning News. But now he's a state champion at 24.5. He jumped 26 in the area meet, which was a nationally qualifying distance. I've only dabbled in the long jump, he says, as he wins the Texas State record. Don't even talk to me.
I will say that Jalen Reagor jumps further than 11-10.5 because I think that Jalen Reagor breaks the record. I think Jalen Reagor goes, I think Jalen Reagor goes like 12-4, 12-5.
Is this in your combine predictions offense?
Yes.
Jalen Reagor breaks it?
Yes.
Oh, man. All right. I think he jumps over 12, so I'll take the over as well. I won't have him breaking Byron Jones, but I think a healthy 12-foot broad jump is in the cards, as one does. Jalen Reagor could jump over two of me.
Yeah.
He could just stand at my feet and then jump over my head if my head was twice as far from my feet as it currently is.
All right. How much time we got left in this pod? Okay, we don't have too many questions left. Somebody said Jalen Reagor over under 40 of a 4-3 and an over under broad of 12 feet. So I got over on the broad and I got under on the 40. I think he goes high 4-2s. That's what I think.
Who is this?
Jalen Reagor. Same.
Oh, beat. I think Jalen Reagor can run in the 4. Yeah. I think
in the what? The 4 what? Did you say 3
the
or 2?
Four threes.
No, but it says over under 4-3 flat.
Okay, then he's running in the 4-3, so it's over on 4-3 flat. If we have Reagor and Ross both running in the 4-2s in this class, I'm not going to be able to speak in full sentences for a whole week. So he's running in the 4-3s.
Well, you not speaking would mean that I'm doing the podcast solo. So
exactly.
Yeah, I'm going
to be sad for you.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Jalen Reagor under 4-3 then. See what I did there? It's a little jab.
Oh, wow.
It's a little jab
really
at my my friend
oh,
and colleague Benjamin
Solek.
Here's a very interesting question. From Ryan, he says, which combine invite would have the best chance to win in single combat versus the Mountain in Game of Thrones?
And who's the meanest offensive lineman we've got? Jedrick Wills?
Him or Makai, maybe, I guess. Right?
That would be interesting. How big is the Mountain got?
Thor Bjorgensen.
I'm over 400.
Yeah.
Should we be going a different direction?
Yes, I already have my answer.
Who?
My answer is either Jeff Gladney or Jerry Jeudy. Those are my two answers.
Just because of the agility?
Yes. I think Oberyn is the dude's name, right? Martell?
Yes,
who faced
the Viper dude.
Who faced the mountain. I just watched this episode of Game of Thrones, and that's the only way that you have a chance against him, is if you go completely contrasting style and just go full speed and just try to either tire him out or run around him. And Oberyn should have beat the mountain, but then he got super cocky and then he got his face crushed in, which was extremely graphic and wild. But you gotta go totally the opposite direction.
Alternatively, we get the most athletic quarterback we can and we give him some sort of projectile weapon.
Ah.
And so then it's just like evade and occasionally throw a thing.
Okay, so who's got the strongest arm in the class?
Right. We give Jalen Hurts a few javelin and we go, okay, don't let him touch you, and when he's tired, throw stuff at him.
I don't hate it. I don't know if it works.
I don't think any of this works.
Oh, dude, okay. I think mine work. I think Jeff Gladney works. Do.
Joe Burrow on Mekhi Becton's shoulders, okay? So it's like a mount situation.
Okay.
And by single combat, what was clearly implied was dual combat versus one person.
You realize that two people fighting stacked against each other would probably be at a great disadvantage, no matter what.
No, I'm saying so Mekhi does the running around.
Yes.
And just... Joe does the throw pebbles in his eyes initially, blind him.
Interesting.
And then throw knives at his vital organs.
I'm not sure that works, but I think it's an interesting proposition there. All right, everybody, that's all the time that we have for here on this Fan Friday podcast. Appreciate everybody that sent in questions, whether it was in the premium Slack channel or in the Twitter thread or on Instagram. Really appreciate you guys always making time to try to get in on the show. We love it. Fan Friday is yours to take control over, and you guys never let us down. So we really appreciate y'all getting in on the show and doing that. Next week, Combine Week. Ben and I will be making our way to Indianapolis, the frozen tundra, if you ask me. It's going to be like 15 degrees. I'm going to have to bring both of the jackets that I own, just wear them at the same time, try to combine them into one thicker jacket just to try to survive Combine Week. It's going to be a lot of fun. You guys know that anytime that Ben and I are in the same area, you never know what's going to happen with the podcast. We're going to be live from Radio Row and from Tin Roof in Indianapolis doing a couple of different podcast shows throughout the week. We'll be letting you guys know what the schedule is there. We'll still have a Mock Draft Monday episode. We're still going to have the DB group that we have to go over. And then, of course, Ben and I are going to devote an entire show, I believe it's on Wednesday next week, to having a draft where we're drafting different combine participants, and at the end of the week, we're going to add them all up, we're going to score it, and we're going to get a winner between the two of us. It's going to be a lot of fun. Stick around. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.